This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much, you, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Sing along with us, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And Scott Criscola is the one that almost didn't happen. But we're here. We're gutting through it.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, the old nerve in the air, because when there's a RAW in Providence and we record a podcast that night, something wonky always happens. Last time was the epic Daniel Bryan turning on the Wyatts and the place going crazy. That's still like an iconic moment.
Yep.
Tonight there's already been some drama going down, but we'll see what else unfolds. But here we are, and just miles away from me is where they're recording this evening's episode of Raw.
Yes, and good evening, JR. Good evening, Place B Nation. Welcome to episode 414 of the Mothership, baby, the gold standard. And, originally the draft was supposed to be tonight, remember?
Yes.
And I know you were kind of kicking around, you, Mr. Flanagan, so whoever was maybe thinking of going. And then, of course, you had work plans, and then, of course, the draft got moved to tomorrow night. Where is tomorrow night's SmackDown? I don't even know.
Worcester!
Your other old stomping grounds. Right.
I think it was originally supposed to be actually last week in Detroit. That was the original.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, it was supposed to be last week.
I think it was ever supposed to be in Providence. I think it was Detroit, and then once they decided to put it on SmackDown, it got moved. Yeah, I figured it'd be kind of a throwaway, being the last non-draft episode. And then you're right, once I had to travel for work, it became kind of it would have had to be like a really big show on tap for me to even try and push it. So,
and we do have a world title match tonight. Dean Ambrose is defending against Seth Rollins. Some rumors that they're going to...
Who do you like better, Dean Ambrose?
A Christmas.
Seth Rollins.
Stocking. And, of course, JR, you and I are all geeked and excited because we are in the home stretch of the second, next to SummerSlam, the second biggest party of the summer.
Yes.
And that is, of course, the beloved St. Mary this weekend.
Yes.
Everybody coming in, huh? What a congregation.
It's going to be quite the crew.
Yeah.
We got Mr. Souza in the mix this year.
Souza, my fellow Bruin fan. I haven't seen him. I've never met him. I'm looking forward to it.
I've seen him ever. Yeah, no, we get a robust reply list so far, so we'll see how things shake out. Hopefully the weather will hold its course, and it'll be a heater as usual, but it should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to the whole weekend. So, of course, there will be no podcast next week, as the fallout for that weekend takes us into the week. So.
Yes.
So we'll take a week off here, but we've been going strong every week, and here we are yet again.
Yes, and how was your little sojourn today? It was like a wrestler getting a meeting with Vince and Stanford, and then having a shootout to wherever Raw is. You kind of did like a one shot today, huh?
I was making towns. You know, I went to Philly, down to Dover, which I'd never been to. It was an interesting trip down to Delaware. Oh. Did not go far enough to meet the Briscoes, but I was within shouting distance.
You were nowhere near, what is it? Not South Fork.
I was at Sandy Hook, but it's Sandy Fork.
Sandy Fork. That's a, not Sandy Hook. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been to UD. I've been to University of Delaware. It's a nice campus.
Yeah.
Drove through. But you made it back. And
barely. With those storms, we get delayed, and it was looking dicey for a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? No storms have come through here yet.
It's funny. The radar looked... It was like iffy in Philly, and we were just pulling. When I say we were literally backing off from the gate, and then all of a sudden we stopped, and they're like, "Oh, there's lightning coming, so, you know, we gotta wait." So we ended up sitting there for an hour, and then they're like, "Oh, there's too much congestion over LaGuardia going through New York, so we're not sure if we're gonna be able to go." I'm like, "What the fuck?" And then finally we just left like about an hour after sitting there. Mm-hmm. But luckily, the flight's only like 41 minutes or something, so it wasn't. You know, so sitting on the plane for an hour is a lot worse when you have like a 4-hour flight ahead of you. But when you only have a, you know, 40-minute flight, it's not that big of a deal. So
right, what was the airline? Not Evil Delta?
No, it was American, thankfully.
Oh, okay. Right,
screw Delta and Chad Campbell.
all right, well, it's good to have you back. That's right.
Surprise! Hey, surprise!
What is going on here?
Surprise, surprise, you fat buck.
All right. Tonight, JR, inside the big steel box, we go post-SummerSlam. And one of those shows, once again, and I know we feel like a broken record, but it seems like every pay-per-view in 2006, we think to ourselves, you know, I don't really remember this show. Did it suck? I don't know. Maybe it didn't. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, Unforgiven 2006. Pleasantly surprised when I watched it today how much I really love this show. Mm. And a lot of reasons why, because it's actually not a bad show. Might be the best Raw. It might be the best Raw show of the year. Okay. I contend next to One Night Stand, maybe the best of the whole year. But we'll talk about that as we move along. September 17th, 2006. Live from the Air Canada Center in Toronto, Ontario. Do you remember our last sojourn here on pay-per-view, sir?
Was it SummerSlam 04?
It was. It was the Bizarro Wonky. Yes. You used that word once already. We will use it again. The Wonky SummerSlam 2004 Bizarro crowd. This crowd was not Bizarro on this night. I thought this crowd was actually pretty great. Your attendance, pretty good. 16,105. Your buy rate, 0.77. And your announcers, the voices of the red brand, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. We had him on the hot seat today. Maybe, maybe not. Would he hear it? Would he not hear it? But he will hear the Sutton Report.
We are here. The song, run by Dave Fire.
Yeah, whatever that was.
Here's your championship roll call. Edge in day 76 of his title reign.
Before you go any further, I thought it was funny when JR said, "Oh, my new favorite song right now." My new favorite song is Day of Fire and Run.
I'm sure it was on his Walkman, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
Edge in day 76 of his reign. The Big Show, day 75 of his ECW title reign. Johnny Nitro, day 84 already of his Intercontinental reign. The Spirit Squad still rolling along 167 days into their reign. And Lita, 34 days into her title reign. 694 episodes of Raw have aired. Mm-hmm. 15 ECWs, 425 Heats. Now that those important facts have been given, we can look at an upcoming retirement. You know, we'll talk about that later. Some releases occurred here, Scott. If you remember any of them.
September? Let's see. Kurt Angle? No, I'm sorry.
A couple were actually guys that were brought in for ECW.
Stevie Richards?
Nope.
No? Not Dreamer. Blue Meanie? No, he didn't come back in 06.
No, Kid Cash, one of our favorites on the Pitbulls.
Oh! Yeah, that sucks, because he had that great run with the Pitbulls, and they could have kept that. That was a great team.
Yep, he was released due to attitude problems backstage.
Shock.
Took on the personality of an actual pit bull, it seems. From his 92 match to the promotion TV, 18, 17, and 3. So actually not too bad for him.
No,
And a 928 day later, Just Incredible was also released due to no showing in ECW taping and failing to contact management afterward. And it seemed like, you know, he's a guy that's not really in position to be pissing away gigs. But here you go. 520 matches all time. Record 48, 128, and 6. And I'm guessing that's as Just Incredible. He didn't specify. I don't know if that includes his Aldo days or anything else.
Or his PJ Walker jobber days on Raw 93.
And on 9/29, Marty Jannetty was fired for no showing and failure to contact management. I don't remember him even getting rehired. I remember
There's a triple threat right there.
What the hell did he do in 06? I don't remember him being around.
Didn't he do the thing with Sean? No, that was 05.
Maybe did he come in as like a trainer or something, maybe?
Maybe.
Deep South?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, nah, I don't remember that one, really.
It's kind of hard to train anybody when that's how you fucking you talk. You sound like Stu Hart with like the decibel level of zero.
That's all Shawn Michaels' fault. Nothing's his fault. All right, here's some news. Chris Benoit reported to be returning on the 9/9 house show in West Palm Beach. I'm sure there are many that wish he never did. But there's talk that Benoit wasn't pleased that a planned match for one night stand between him and Dean Malenko never, in the words of the immortal Stephen Sutton, motorized. Benoit also needed time off to heal up from nagging injuries, plus take care of his wife, who was recovering from surgery. We'll leave the comments all there. Former Dirty Tag Team Champion Henry Godwin returned on the 9/3 SmackDown house show, defeating Shane Helms. So the great push of our Cruiserweight Champion continues, losing to Henry Godwin in a dark match.
Jesus.
I remember that. Because maybe that's where the Jannetty thing came in, too. I think they were looking to bring guys back like they had with Finley and some of the others to flesh out SmackDown and also to help work the younger guys. So I remember Godwin kind of getting a shot as a favorite at Undertaker. And I feel like he had some kind of personal tragedy, so they gave him this to kind of get his mind off it. Like one of his kids died. It was something weird, I thought, with him.
Mm-hmm.
I could be thinking of someone else, though. There was talk of John Cena moving to SmackDown due to the amount of time he'll lose while promoting the Marine. Triple H is getting heat from his comments he made on September 5th, ECW, saying ECW's original home by saying bingo, and he had nothing to do with the storyline. It was believed that he made the comment as Stephanie is not a fan of the new project and was also trying to get Paul Heyman demoted, as always. There's also talk about Kevin Nash and Scott Hall coming back to the promotion for a possible feud with DX. First person to fail the wellness policy was Randy Orton. Not a shock there. Former WWE talent Kurt Angle is signed with TNA Wrestling, and TNA will be moving to Thursday nights, beginning November 16th. Batista is being rumored to be miserable on SmackDown and wants to go to Raw. So who knows? Who cares about any of that? But there you go. Key wrestling date, September 10th at a SmackDown house show is the scene for a test of company's brand new HD set. And, of course, that wouldn't materialize until January of 08. So they started pretty early here.
Mm, yeah.
Good, yep. 16 months or so. Putting that into place. On 9/11, the WWE returned to Madison Square Garden for the first time in 17 months. On 9/12, WWE taped their final edition of SmackDown to be aired on UPN, and a week later would be the first on CW. Of course, UPN and WB merged to become CW at that time. The Kings of Wrestling became the first team to hold the ROH, CZW, and Shikara Tag Team Championships. So.
But you're going to say the Kings of Sport.
Them too became the greatest sports podcast.
That's right.
9/21, Vince Russo was hired to join the booking committee of TNA with Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett. So,
oh, God. Speaking of the Kings of Sport.
There you go. His guidelines were no sleaze. Dark Mass Super Crazy defeated Shelton Benjamin. We got a couple of the notes we'll talk about from Sutton as we move along.
Okay.
In case you didn't get enough right there.
Exactly. And overall, JR. Again, we said this was the first pay-per-view in Toronto since SummerSlam 04, but how many total in Canada?
I saw the number.
Oh, okay. So I'll tell everyone. This was Canada's 13th
and final
pay-per-view.
Have they gone back since?
Yeah. They went to Montreal. Didn't Aaron go to like Breaking Point or something?
Who cares?
Who cares? Yeah, there was a pay-per-view. They have gone back to Canada. Not in a while, though, but they did.
How about Toronto? Well, have they been back in Toronto for
pay-per-view? No, I don't think so.
Mm, good.
It's weird. All right. And you mentioned the dark matches, of course. All right. Why don't we dive in? Mm. And our first match, JR, is our first title match of the evening.
Yeah.
The Intercontinental title on the line. Your champion, Mr. Nitro. And guess what, JR? We've been talking about releases and everything. Huge return.
Mm.
Since we last were on pay-per-view, who has come back? What prodigal son has returned?
Jeff Hardy made his dirty return on 8/21 after weeks of vignettes teasing it. After leaving in early 2003, spent time in the indies, including an appearance for Ring of Honor. 2004, he signed with TNA, had a very tumultuous 2 years there, eventually getting himself suspended for no-showing their major events, and then said, fuck it, I'm going back to WWE. He signed on 8/4. On 9/4, Jeff Hardy defeated Nitro by DQ when Melina got involved to save Nitro's title. The next week, Hardy mocked Nitro for a press conference that Nitro held to rip on Mick Foley a few weeks back. The press conference had been a critical disaster and was panned by everyone as Nitro Molina stumbled their way through the disastrous segment. And so in this segment, Hardy was staring at a painting and claimed it was more exciting to watch paint dry than to watch Johnny Nitro's press conference. Hardy then dumped paint all over Nitro. Later in the night, the two men were opposing sides of a six-man, which Hardy's team won. So, Scott, before we get into the match, what did you think of Hardy's return? I liked it a lot. I was a fan. I thought he was starting to really put it together before he left in early 03, even despite the, the issues that he was having. I thought it was good veteran depth to pick up. I thought he was good, for this role and to see where he grows from there. It was a good star name to bring back. He always was a guy that had a lot of potential, and he had pegged him to be a big breakout, and then he kind of flamed out. But I like this return. I remember at the time really liking this return. I was pretty excited for it. We'll track him over the next 3 years and, how he gets going. But what were your feelings, watching it now and at the time, if you recall?
I never disliked Matt Hardy. I was always pretty much, neutral to either Hardy brother, but from a booking perspective, I think it definitely added depth to the mid card on Raw because, really, other than I guess Carlito, and there really wasn't that much, I wouldn't say star power or even good work rate in the mid card at the moment on Raw. So this was a huge move, and Jeff needed to come back. I think he liked the comfort of familiar surroundings. I think Jeff got discouraged because I think he thought, well, TNA's new and I'm a star and they'll make me world champion in a week. And when that, when he kept jobbing to Jeff Jarrett, I think it was like, wow, this place
sucks. I don't
think
it was that at all. I think it was more that he was fucking up in WWE and they ditched him and he just went there because it was the alternative. I don't think he was like looking. I don't think he's ever really been looking to be like a, I'm not there booking me like a star. I don't know. That never seemed really to be a concern for him.
Nah, probably not.
I think he made enough money alone from like 1999 to 2002 that he probably didn't ever have to do anything again. But
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. That to me, I just think he wanted to work still. And
that was the only option.
Yeah.
They didn't go to ROH, huh? Well, they weren't
really. He did for that match.
Yeah.
Well, TNA was pretty viable. I mean, it's not like now. I mean, they were in 2004. They were like kind of on the way up.
No, I know.
2006 was like they were coming off one of the hottest years. 2005 was a great year for them. So
yes,
I don't think it was that weird that he went there.
Mm. He just, thought. I think he also thought he could probably get away with some of his, shall we say, extracurricular activities, and didn't. That's what cost him. So. So he has returned and I was happy too. I think it was a big deal for WWE to have a familiar face back.
Yeah, they needed some more star power too. It almost ineffectively, replaces Angle in many ways.
Yeah.
Same level, I think at this point. I mean, Angle is a big name, but I think within the world of WWE, Jeff Hardy's a pretty big name. one drug addict for another. I think it was a pretty good swap. Like, if you had to lose Angle, I think picking up Hardy replicates the majority of what Angle gave you. Maybe not fully in ring, but Hardy had his own, very good positives in the ring, too. And so I think it was good. It was a good trade-off for them.
Yeah.
If you had to lose Angle, replacing him with Hardy's not a bad choice.
No, I agree. I think Jeff back does add a lot of depth, and he's a fan favorite. Crowd loves him. So, and I think this was a perfect spot, which we'll get to now, a perfect spot for him to start fresh again. And that is being in this match. He gets a Intercontinental Championship match with Johnny Nitro.
Yeah, Nitro gaining confidence, still rolling along as IC champ, despite the disaster of a press conference. I remember that segment.
Yeah.
It was brutal. So perfect feud for Nitro. Styles similar, name values there for him. We get some really feeling out as Hardy's grabbing the arm and working that for a couple minutes. Nitro bails to regroup, trying to break the momentum. Crowd is hot for Hardy as Nitro grabs control and targets the ribs and lower back. Hardy comes right back and hits a slinging dropkick in the corner, but Nitro rolls out to dodge the swanton. Hardy follows out and runs a guardrail into the clothesline and then pitches Nitro back in. Hardy tries to come off the top but gets caught, and Nitro focuses on the leg. Hardy tried a couple of comebacks, but Nitro stayed tight on the leg, grabbing near falls. Hardy's great selling of the knee here as Nitro keeps pounding on it. Hardy finally gets a break when he dodges a corkscrew moonsault. Hardy grabs a near fall with a whisper in the wind, then hits follows with a swanton, but his knee keeps him from covering quickly, and Nitro gets his foot on the ropes. Hardy hits a mule kick, but Nitro grabs a leg lace and wrenches the knee again. Hardy eventually rolls out and gets a near fall after Nitro and Molina collided on the apron. Molina sneaks over and blasts Hardy with her boot for the win. I thought it was a great opener. The chemistry was real crisp here. The leg work and selling was really on point by both guys, like Nitro working it and Hardy selling. Lots of big moves late, and the crowd was super into it. I, I, again, this solidified my thoughts on Hardy being added to the roster. And he's, you know, we were starting to see this in 03, and he picks up with it here, how much more focused he is in the ring. Like, he's not just kind of a spot monkey anymore. You know, he's like, not just, I mean, he still does the crazy stuff, but he pieces it together. His selling was really good. He's, you know, psychology is there. So you could tell he's grown a bit as a worker as he comes back. And it's a perfect level feud for him to get, you know, his feet wet again, and for Nitro to have a guy to mix it up with. So I like this match a lot. I loved Hardy being back. What are your thoughts?
Point one, again, great to see Jeff Hardy back after, as we mentioned earlier, a relatively mediocre run in TNA. I know we got a few title shots with Jeff Jarrett to no success. So it was probably good to see him come back. Point two, perfect guy for Nitro to face. This slides in perfectly. I think Nitro needed an experienced guy to work with. You know, a guy who can counter his moves and take his moves, because, you know, a bigger guy than Jeff is. So I think it worked out for Nitro to have a guy that he could you know, pinball around for him, and really build his heel heat, because Jeff is just universally loved, regardless of what anybody thinks of him in his personal life. Jeff is a universally loved wrestler. He's kind of like RVD. And we talked about this back when we were doing the 01 vaults. And point three, perfect feud for both guys, as it can go over multiple pay-per-views. I think we needed some we've talked about stability in the mid-card right now on Raw. This is a great pay-per-view. This is a great feud that we can stretch out over. They can have their stuff on the shows, and then we don't have another paper. We don't have another Raw pay-per-view till, well, you thought it was Taboo Tuesday, but of course that'll change its name, and we'll get there. And then, you know, we can stretch it out into 2007 if we really wanted to, if this feud is that good, which it is. So, point one, great to see Jeff back. Point two, great guy for Nitro to get, because it kind of warms Jeff up to back to the WWE style, not as slow and clunky as TNA. TNA kind of worked the, you know, old school kind of NWA style with a guy like Jarrett. And point three, this is a great feud for both guys, because you could stretch it out over multiple pay-per-views and keep them occupied to solidify the middle of the card on Raw. So I love this match. I thought it was very good opener, maybe the best opener of the year.
It's good, too, because it brings some charisma to, you know, it, like, Shelton is great in the ring, but, like, you know, that was Nitro's main feud before this, and I guess Carlito a little bit, too, but he needed someone charismatic to really get the fans engrossed in his feud, someone that they care that him and Molina are screwing over. I also find it funny that Molina's just, you know, got it back to doing her thing, like, the Foley shit's like, it never happened, you know what I mean? It's like Dallas, it just ended. And here she is, just back with Nitro doing their thing. I guess they did the press conference mocking Mick, but I don't know. It just feels like it's just rearview mirror. Like, it's not even mentioned here at this show.
Right. Yeah. So so there you go. Johnny Nitro retains his Intercontinental Championship with a little chicanery in a very good match and a great start to this pay-per-view. We go backstage, speaking of Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, we do. Well, first we see Teddy Long in the skybox scouting John Cena. We'll talk about why later. And then Matt Hardy checks in on Jeff backstage until Lita comes in and calls them both screw-ups and losers. That was not very nice of Lita.
No. And Matt gave him a consolation xylophone.
Yes.
After losing his match. Let's go ride on the
dilapidated bag of Coke.
Let's go out of the backyard. All right. Next up, the continuing growth of the Samoan Bulldozer. Yep, him too. And it seems like after Umaga was the linchpin, or the kind of the muscle for
Umaga.
He was the muscle for Vince and Shane. Vince and Shane kind of siphoned off to somebody else, and we'll get to that when we get to that match. So how'd we get here?
We arrived on 8/21 when Kane was wrestling Johnny Nitro. And Umaga and Armando Estrada interfered. Umaga took Kane out with a Samoan spike. After Kane sat up, Umaga stomped him down, ascended the second rope, and hit a second spike, leaving Kane on the mat, bleeding from the mouth. On 9/4, Kane returned, running off Umaga as he was about to assault Ric Flair. The next week, things really escalated when Umaga and Flair squared off in a match. That dropped Flair on the floor with a Samoan drop. Kane then came out and saved his grandfather and started to bash Umaga's skull with a chair. Finished Umaga off by smashing him in the face with the ring steps, knocking Umaga into the fans. And of course, this also had stemmed from SummerSlam when Kane came out to thwart Umaga during the DX McMahon's match. So Estrada says Kane is no monster. He rips him before the bout. Kane's focused during his entrance. We get some big blows from Kane, and the fight quickly spills to the floor where the Big Red Machine makes a grab at Estrada but walks into a STO. Umaga works Kane over with basic strikes in the ring, including a running ass splash in the corner. And then Estrada calls for the spike, but Kane blocks it. Umaga stays in control with more right hands until Kane slugs his way back in and hits a clothesline. Umaga is reeling, but hits a big Samoan drop to buy some time and then misses a top rope splash as Kane answers with a flying clothesline, followed by right-hand thrusts and headbutts. Kane blocks a charge and tosses Umaga over the top and follows out as the fight spills into the crowd for a double countout. The brawl continues onto the stage and is finally broken up by a bunch of officials. I thought the match itself was pretty meandering. It felt stuck in first gear. Like, it never escalated. They just kind of kept doing the basic strikes and stuff. Never really got going. I thought the finish was fine. And we'll see if we agree or disagree on this one. Because Umaga stays unbeaten and the feud can continue, which I think Umaga needed. Like, okay, we've seen him be built up. He's had a lot of squashes, beat some guys. And now he kind of needed a feud. And Kane, to me, is like a really good gatekeeper of this division here. It's like, all right, Umaga, we're prepping you for that next step up. But you got to get by a guy like Kane first. So it's a little bit of a struggle. He doesn't just mow through that kind of guy. What are your points?
Point one. I concur about the type
of
opponent.
I still wish you call him Steps, just so we can do the song.
Three steps. Step one.
You can have lots of fun.
Good progression for Umaga. You are right. I think it's good to have a bigger guy kind of get out of his comfort zone. Mm. You know, he's faced guys like Flair and other guys who were either smaller or kind of even, but Kane is physically bigger. He's taller, probably not the same weight, but not off, not too far off anyway. So I think it's good. I think it's good that Umaga got outside his comfort zone and had to kind of work around a bigger dude. He couldn't just chuck the guy around like he chucked Flair or other smaller workers. Step two, Estrada's awesome, right? I mean, doesn't he harken back to, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say low rent version, but I mean, I wouldn't put him in the pantheon of Bobby or Johnny V. He's better than Frenchie.
Yes.
I don't know about Fuji though. I don't have to debate you about Fuji though. Let's get close. Maybe it's a language barrier, but Estrada's great. I mean, he has definitely put Umaga over and has been a big help for him. Step three. Well, I'll say this. I actually disagree with you on the match. I love the match. I didn't think it meandered at all. I think there were spots that I didn't expect. A lot of the guys moved around faster. There were a couple of, I mean, Umaga went off the top rope. When did you ever see that?
Muhammad Ali is a motivator.
He doesn't even know who Muhammad Ali is.
Yeah, you thought so? I don't know.
No, I mean,
it felt sluggish to me. It just,
really?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think so.
They tried. I feel like the stakes never increased. Like, if you know, it felt like an opening match brawl the whole way through to me. Like, it felt like stage one of a bigger match, and then it just ends. I don't think it was bad. It just felt like a little bit like, all right, you hit me, I'll hit you. I'll go for my finisher, you block it, now we'll fight in the crowd. I don't know. It felt like a TV match to set up a pay-per-view match.
I thought they had some expert reversals. I mean, Kane did that thing that, and you know, Umaga took that big bump over the top rope, which he really hadn't done. I don't know. I thought they took more chances than I anticipated. Mm. Now, I'm not comparing Kane to Flair. I'm not. But all I'm saying is, you can continue this feud and have Kane, you know, lay down. Because the future is bright, clearly, for Umaga, and I think they had things set for him.
I remember Kane's series with Ricky Steamboat back in 1989.
And I mean, if Taker's going to lay down to Kali, I mean, what's the difference? Why can't Kane lay down to Umaga? It's almost the same feud, and Taker's more over than Kane.
Yeah.
So I disagreed with the double countout. I think Umaga should have won clean. But it doesn't hurt anything.
But I think it depends how they would have beaten him. Because I don't know. I feel like if they would have had to make it very, very strongly clean. But then I think that's it. Like, I don't – because here's the difference. To me, Kali's endgame was continuing his feud with Undertaker. Mm-hmm. So I think eventually Taker was going to beat him for the win, and probably in the Punjabi prison. So I think the Kane losing here pretty much ends the feud, because he's not going to beat Umaga, right? Because he's not big enough. Like, Taker's a bigger deal. So that feud continues. Taker probably wins it. So why have Umaga beat Kane multiple times? And if you blow that feud off here with a win, all right, where does Umaga go now? Now you're really burning through opponents for Umaga, and you're really not heating him up until the new year. So you got to fill out the rest of 2006 still. You know, you'd already done the thing as Vince's henchman. He had already done the, you know, he had already run through some, you know, legends, stuff like Flair. He'd done a lot of job matches. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get your point. I don't think it hurt him at all. Like, at least he didn't do a cheap kind of roll-up kind of pin or something. You know what I mean? Like, this to me, right. Umaga's a wild man. He's a brawler. These guys hate each other. They brawled in the aisle at SummerSlam. They've, you know, attacked each other viciously on TV. Now they brawl again here. I think it's fine. I don't think it hurts him at all, Umaga. Like, I think it's now he'll come back and beat him. You know, I think it's
right.
It just shows that he's a wild man versus a guy like Kali, who, right? You know, that was like his first match, so he kind of needed that establishment. So I'd compare Taker to Flair almost more. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm not debating the ending as much with you as much as the match itself. I think you're short selling it a little bit. I don't think it was as meandering as you might think. I feel like they took a lot more chances.
It was meandering.
It was meandering. No, I think they took more chances than I anticipated, and I ended up actually really enjoying the match. The ending was just a little shaky, but that's meandering. Fine. I mean, if they have another great match that physical, I'm fine with it. So, Umaga and Kane end in a double countout. Protects Umaga.
Very meandering match.
In a match that's got expert with removals. Expert removables. And no, it was a really good match. That's one of those ones. You know what? It's on the network. Pop it on.
Meandering.
It was figure it out for yourself. Expert reversals. All right.
Good day, sir.
Meandering.
And then, that's mean. Defending this guy, lays down for Flair, and now he's meandering?
Yeah, he's meandering through a win, a non-win with Kane.
He had a good
and Flair
match.
Should have jobbed. That's 100% accurate.
Fucking Kali and that bullshit at Judgment. No, all right, whatever. Jerry Lawler says that his favorite song right now is Run by Daniel
Yeah, Tyler. The only thing he's running is to the fucking soda machines. He's going to the Mountain Dew.
Yes. All right. Next up, JR.
Actually, we do go backstage. Vince and Shane prep and
watch yes.
footage of their recent win over Triple H.
Yes.
Get ready to go.
I got a funny...
No penis pumps this time.
No, but... That and I'll mention it again. I don't know where Vince got that weird orange tank top on that Raw. It looked like a fucking unitard. It was like really strange looking, very un-Vince like. But anyway, next up, our second title match of the evening, the World Tag Team Championships, aka the Red Belts, are on the line. Your champions are still the 5-man team of Spirit Squad, as was mentioned in the report, Les Sultans. Mm-hmm. But our number one contenders, JR, more newcomers.
Yes, here on the horizon. The Highlanders defeated Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch to earn a pay-per-view title match. The next week, Raw emanated from Madison Square Garden. We're treated to a surprise as Roddy Piper teamed up with the Highlanders to wrestle 3 members of the Spirit Squad. Piper won the match, but the highlight was seeing the Scott team played to the ring by a pipe and drum band. Of course, the Highlanders comprised of Robbie and Rory McAllister. Portrayed 2 rowdy misfits from Scotland. The 2 men met while training under Waldo Von Erich in Canada. In 2001, they debuted under the Highlander name, working in a variety of independent promotions throughout Ontario. In July of 2005, they inked a developmental deal with WWE and were signed to OVW. In June of 2006, vignettes began airing, showing Robbie and Rory exploring the big cities and looking and acting completely out of place. They debuted on 7-3, defeating Matt Stryker and Robert Conway. Weird that they were around since 2001. Like, that's an odd time frame to think of these guys being active. So what did you think of the addition of the Highlanders? It helped kind of flesh out the mid-card. They needed kind of a feel-good tag team. They didn't really have any like that. I mean, you know, at the time they were compared a lot to like the Bushwhackers, just in the way they kind of acted, like a little kind of goofy and out there and, you know, natural fan favorites. And, you know, they could get it done in the ring, but also were kind of just kind of weirdos. So, like, I think that's a pretty apt comparison, and they haven't really had a team like that in quite a while. I mean, I can't even think of the last time they had a team like this. So it was pretty much just out there to, you know, make the fans happy, I guess.
It's
like Eugene of tag teams, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if I go that far. I definitely think that we needed an extra team in the tag division, and they were fun. I mean, they were fun guys. They were goofy. They actually wrestled in their kilts, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah,
actually, and they were good workers. I mean, I'm going to mention this match now. You know, after you have your comments, they weren't really bad workers. The crowd was pumped for them. They did their job. So I was very happy to see a fresh team Goofy or not, in the, you know, on Raw. I think Raw was the one that needed the freshening up of the roster more than SmackDown did. We'll get into that.
Yeah,
next.
They definitely needed some depth, and especially in the tag division, which has been very soft. So it seems like, you know, with Kaden Murdoch kind of sticking around still, the Highlanders, even kind of resetting the Spirit Squad as a tag team out of the whole shit with DX.
Right.
It seems like they're really trying to focus on legitimate tag teams. I mean, you know, we hear it year after year with this company where it comes to, okay, this is the year we're going to refocus the tag division. You know, like every 3 years on a cycle they do this. And it seems like this was one of those points where they were trying to bring teams in and refocus the division and rebuild the division. And the Highlanders, I always think of Rotella. So, I don't know if it's because he reminds me of one of them, but I feel like he liked them and he always talked about them.
He did. He did like them, yeah. I mentioned to him today when I was watching it, and he's, oh, I remember those guys.
You know, by the way, his grace period is up. I'm not going to that fucking Memorial Day party anymore. It never comes. He's not even going to the cabin, right, this year for St. Mary's? Or is he there this weekend?
He went this weekend.
Yeah, he's not coming.
I agree. I told him. I said, well, what do you, oh, it's, I forgot which nephew, which one of Kristen's kids. And I'm like, well, the party's going, the kid's party, I mean, his nephew's party's going until, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning? I mean,
right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Week.
Yeah, that's it. I'm out for Memorial Day. I'm calling it now. I'm out for Memorial Day next year.
Week.
That's it. I've gone to like five straight of those, and I don't remember the last time he's here. I think White Sox was the last time he showed up. Or did he come last year with his stupid shirt for like an hour, maybe?
Yes, he came from like 5:15 to 5:27.
Yeah. I think. Dumbass.
Might have been the year before, actually. I don't even know. I don't even think it was last year. Might have been the year before, actually. 5:15 to 5:22.
Him and the stupid Highlanders and his dumb face and his hairy back.
more hair in his back than on Robbie than Ron fucking Robbie's beard.
Gross motherfucker. I'm going to throw him out of the luxury box at SummerSlam. Fucking clothesline him.
All right. So here we go. So the Highlanders the Highlanders just came from a Southern Caribbean cruise and now have a title match.
I'm not a fan of Kevin Ali. So the Spirit Squad hanging in there now. Still champions back in the mid-card after getting squashed and murdered by DX, but here we are, still hanging around. Again, Highlander's pretty fun getting over. Kenny and Mikey rep the squad tonight. Rory and Mikey start things off with a back and forth controlled by Rory. Highlanders tag in and out, working the arm. That was pretty good basic teamwork there. Get some nice moves in the corner by Rory, pushing himself high in the air with the ropes and then dropping both knees hard. Squad traps Robbie in the corner and gets some offense in, but Robbie cracks Kenny with a drop kick and knocks him outside. Robbie whiffs on a suicide dive and gets jumped on the floor by the rest of the Spirit Squad. Spirit Squad keeps double teaming and wearing Robbie down, using some good heel tricks to frustrate Rory on the apron. Rory finally gets a tag and cleans house as the crowd is mildly invested at best. We have a double slingshot suplex, but Kenny makes a save. Johnny comes back in and kicks Rory as Mikey covers for the win. It was a good little tag match. The finish really killed the crowd. But I thought the squad deserved some shine. Like on the other hand, you know, maybe you take a shot at the Highlanders and give them the titles. I don't know. But I feel like the Spirit Squad has been through a lot of shit. And they've built up enough good heat that you can really make a team. So why not go kind of honky with them, honky-tonk man, and let them, you know, really work themselves up. Mm-hmm. More with the crowd, keep sneaking out these wins. A team like the Highlanders, if you want to compare them to the Bushwhackers, you know, they can afford losses like this, and they're just gonna still be over. Like, they weren't a team to me that had the pedigree or profile they had a hot shot the titles onto them, and that happened too many times in this period. Like, a new team would show up and we put the belts right on them. Like, we didn't need that. Let them work their way up the ladder. They absolutely did not need to win here. The Spirit Squad had been doing good work. I thought they've reset themselves finally after SummerSlam and kind of rebuilt themselves just in the tag division.
Right.
Doing the free bird thing, really building up some heat, let them do what they got to do. It was a really basic match at its core. It was good enough, and it was definitely an upgrade of what we've had lately. So,
step one, Highlanders are a great Raw gimmick for a team. We kind of went over that already before. Step two, not sure if the Spirit Squad was still over after DX pretty much mutilated them, but they were still fine in the mid-card, and that's why I agree with you that just if you're going to take the tag straps off, you might as well just release them because then you pretty much emasculated them all the way down to the bare bones. So I thought they were fine keeping the straps. And step three, again, I'm going to agree with you. Crowd was red hot. Well, I'll say red hot, but they were hot for this match. And then the ending, they just pretty much dumped on. But it needed to be done. Again, if you take the straps off the Spirit Squad, you might as well just break them all up and make them five jobbers. I think it had to be done. So really not much more to say there. So the Spirit Squad retain the World Tag Team Championships in a pretty good match with the Highlanders, and kind of a dumpy ending, but what are you going to do? Do we go backstage? Or do we go right to the next match? I don't think we go backstage.
Where do we go? Do we go backstage? I don't know. No, we don't.
It's not like Stu. Let's go backstage.
Come to my bunker, Criscola.
I never thought you could even fathom adding this.
Come to my bungalow.
Where's the magic carpet?
Sean's going to be downstairs watching Hunting with his cross eyes, but don't worry about it, baby. Put on that orange tank top I borrowed from Vince. Hop on my magic carpet, and I'll take you for a trip around Stanford. Go to Cove Pizza. And we'll make out by Sound Waters. Oh, you ever seen my matches terrorizing Starrcade 94 or Criscola? I'm going to put the robe on for you tonight. Has a heart. Fuck Bret Hart. Piece of shit. Always talking crap about me still these days, Criscola. I'll give him a 4 out of 10. That's inches inside of you, Scotty boy.
pizza. It still is, by the way. It's still there. I don't know if they changed owners, but they kept it as Co Pizza.
That's good.
Actually, you remember, that place, Pat's Hubba Hubba, down the street, the burger place?
No.
No, with the pink front, they changed. They're now Cove Street Grill or something. But anyway, although Jimmy Seaside, which is across the street from where you were going to live at one point, is no longer. Anyway, we are now on to, I guess you could say, the co-main event of this show. The feud continues. How does it continue even after DX won last month?
Well, you see, on 8/21, Raw took place in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which allowed DX access to mess with Vince's personal possessions. And where were they that evening? On this night, they chose to spray paint his beloved private jet, which I just saw earlier tonight in TF Green Airport.
That's right. Yeah.
Vince called the cops and demanded that DX be arrested. After a break, Michaels and Triple H reappeared on the Titantron and revealed that they also had spray painted the front of WWE headquarters. The antics continued at the end of the night when the McMahon limo was tagged, and as they tried to drive away, the axle ripped off the back of the car. The next week, Vince decided to stay in his hotel room and leave Shane to punish DX. Shane decreed that DX would have to face mystery opponents in the main event, and those opponents ended up being Mr. Kennedy, Finley, and William Regal. After the pin, Shane restarted the match and added Big Show to the team. They would beat down DX until Vince appeared and looked for revenge. He grabbed a lead pipe, whacked him in the face with it, and choked him with it as well. Vince then hit Michaels with a video camera and choked him with a cord. After the bloody beatdown, Vince announced a pay-per-view Hell in a Cell. On 9/11, Vince and Triple H battled in a no-holds-barred match. That featured a ton of interference as always. Vince was able to steal the win, but mainly due to a Triple H ear injury that happened during the match. DX was jumped by a group of mercenaries, and Hunter's head was slammed in the limo door, bloodying his ear in an injury that carried into the Cell match. And of course, the Hell in a Cell used here is a brand new one, Scott. Now is 20 feet high and weighs 5 tons. The old one was 16 feet and weighed 2 tons. And do you know which number Hell in a Cell this is? And of course, always remember, this is Sutton math. Sorry, I do not confirm its accuracy.
This is the...
I mean, he could be off by 10 either way. I don't know.
16th?
14th. Because... Now, I know he may not be counting the TV ones. I don't know.
Well, this is what... Well, the reason I think he got that is because when Triple H was coming up the ramp, he JR said that he tied Taker with 7 Cell appearances. So I think he just added the two of them together. But I can't fathom, were there any Cells without either of them in it? Like I said, well, obviously the Raw ones,
yeah,
right?
Was
Austin
and
Foley.
Didn't Kane and Mankind have one?
Kane and Mankind.
That's one without them.
And then, weren't there two?
There was a tag.
Okay.
But is that the only one without Triple H or Undertaker?
I think so.
Mankind one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
at least.
Oh, well, no, Brock. Oh, no, Brock Taker.
Yeah, Batista, Triple H, Shawn, Triple H, Nash, Triple H.
Taker, Brock.
Yep.
Armageddon. They were both in the one at Armageddon. Right. 2000.
Triple H and Mick. Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I think they've been in almost every one to this point.
So 16th. Yeah. Seven each for them, and then the one on Raw. So, all right, that was close.
Taker, Boss Man.
Yeah. Taker, Mick.
There you go.
What was Hunter's first one?
Cactus, wasn't it?
That's the one at Armageddon.
No, Cactus.
Cactus, so earlier that year. Okay, there you go. All right. So, yeah, so it makes, so this is
no matter how many you have, I'll be in there.
So, yeah, the 16th. The 14th,
according to Sutton, but you think it's that he's not counting the.
He's obviously not counting that one extra. So
it counts everything else. TV. That's the only thing that counts.
I know.
We know how many fucking Heat episodes there were, but we don't know. We don't include those two Hell in a Cell.
Right. So pay-per-view Hell in a Cells, this is the 14th.
Okay.
Overall Hell in a Cells, this is the 16th.
Okay.
Or 17th, actually, if they count that tag. So, yeah, 17th.
Oh, my head hurts. All right. Feud is still raging on since this told you something, math. You're going to leave a plus minus. It's like the polls that they do. You know, you always got to leave like a little margin for error there.
Margin for error, plus or minus 36.
Yeah, right. Well, how many stone? All right, so feud is still raging on since December. Stakes raised inside the Cell. Big Show added into the mix is the muscle. Show's been on a tear, but is breaking down. Is being used more and more as well. He's kind of a catch-22 with poor Big Show at this point because he's having, you know, he's working hard. He's putting on these great, you know, I don't say great matches, but great angles on ECW, and he's kind of gaining cred back again in the company. And it's like the best run, arguably, he's had. And so with that comes the added pressure of, hey, you know, we want you to be on more TV, more pay-per-view, get used more, more and more. At the converse, he's breaking down physically. He looks awful. He's gained a ton of weight back. His eyes look like they're about buried. You know, I looked at that guy in UFC, they got his skull fucking destroyed. That's what he looked like with his eyes just sunk back into his head. You know, he looked like he was about to keel over at any moment, but I'm sure he was getting, you know, compensated nicely because he's all over the place. So it's probably real tough for him to say no when he's being used so well for the first time in forever. It's a real tough spot for him at this point. But Vince and Shane, still great characters in a vacuum, but I thought by this point in 06, have really been overexposed. And I mean, they were dormant for a long time. I mean, since the end of 03, both guys did nothing. All of 04 and almost all of 05, right? I mean, Vince didn't really get back involved into that until he threw Bischoff in the trash, right?
Yeah, and then all the stuff.
I mean, he was on here and there in 05, but nothing. I mean, he didn't wrestle again until 22, right?
Yeah, and he started the stuff with Sean in, what, December 05?
Yeah, the end of December.
So before that, it was what, when he beat Stephanie in No Mercy 03, really?
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
Taker at Survivor Series.
Taker at Survivor Series, right. Okay.
And Shane's was the Kane stuff. So, I mean, both guys had really been off TV, and now they're, like, super overexposed. I mean, they're still doing good work, but just, I think it's to the fact that they've been pretty much programmed in the same feud for, you know, 10 months.
Right.
Is really dragging things out. So DX comes right in, they kick Shane Show low, and they go to work. DX dominates in and out of the ring using the cage. Shane and Vince get busted open very quickly. Show is still down as their commands get run into the cage over and over. Show recovers and overpowers both DX to curb the momentum. DX comes back and double teams to take him out again. And then we get anytime DX starts to work over the McMahon, Show comes in and lays them out. Show slams Michaels into the cells and McMahon's work over Hunter in the ring. Shane hits a coast to coast and busts Hunter's injured ear back open as Show mocks him. The crowd really tries to rally DX here as the beating and the bloodiness continues. Show starts to destroy Michaels. Vince refuses to end the match because he wants the beating to continue. Show hits the Cobra Clutch backbreaker and leg drop, but Vince picks up Sean again, and that backbreaker was pretty nasty looking, especially when you know how effective Sean's back injury was, whether it was, you know, real or exacerbated or not. Like, even at this point, 4 years later, it's still cringe. You still cringe watching him take any, like, serious shot to his back, just, like, waiting for it to go after everything he had been through. So Vince is picking Sean up, and then because he wants him to be in the Kiss My Ass Club, but Hunter makes a save. Show continues to cut off the DX momentum. Really a huge showpiece from the McMahon's here. Show splashes Vince by accident, and DX trips him up and crotches him. Hunter then puts a chair around Shane's neck, and Michaels hits an elbow on it in a nasty spot, pretty much pilmanizes his neck. Hunter then uses a chair to take out Show. DX dumps Show over the ropes and then pulls his tights down to expose his ass, and then shove Vince's face into it for the ultimate Kiss My Ass Club payoff. Michaels hits Sweet Chin Music, and Hunter uses the sledgehammer to get the win. Vince, as always, takes his big final shit-kicking, gets embarrassed to end this feud. I thought it was a fun brawl. I thought since DX Reunited has been the best match of the series, and probably even since before that, a lot of blood, a lot of weapons. It didn't drag at all. Sho added a lot. He worked hard. He was protected for the most part until we, you know, saw his ass. A lot of carnage at the end, but the crowd was into it the whole way. So I thought this is a really good blow off to what's been a nonstop feud, and definitely better than SummerSlam. I'd say probably better than Shawn and Vince at 22. Better than all the Spear Squad stuff. That they really worked hard, and I liked the big payoff. As stupid as it made kind of Sho look, and as gross as it was, it kind of paid off. Like years of the Kiss My Ass Club. Like I thought they did a nice job by kind of finally giving Vince his comeuppance for what he's been doing since what 01 when he started that. So it was good. They finally shove his ass. I mean, he's gonna face stuff to Rikishi's butt and stuff, but this felt like the real kind of go.
You're not gonna find a bigger ass,
right? So. Right. Just shoving a his bloody face into Big Show's ass to end this big feud. So what did you think of the match? And then what are your final thoughts on the feud?
Step one. Just to piggyback what you said earlier, and we seem to say every month, Big Show's just looking worse and worse. I mean, his eyes look so caved in. They're all puffy and dark, and I mean, he looks awful. And it seems like they use him like all the time now.
Yeah, I mean, he's everywhere. He's on ECW. He's been on Raw. You know, pop up on SmackDown. He's on all these pay-per-views. And he's doing really well, but yeah, he's just, you could tell he's just falling apart.
And how is he not losing weight? That's the part. He's wrestling constantly, and he's not losing any weight.
I mean, he's not wrestling like cruiserweight, high cardio sprints.
Well, that's true,
sprints.
Too.
I mean, he's
well, that is true, too.
And he's talked about it before. The troubles with him are on the road. You know, he's in a lot of pain, so he's not working out. He's eating junk, getting in late. The travel kills you.
Yeah, that's true. But it's
his back and knees are fucked. You know, he's not going to be running cardio the next day.
Well, that's true, and he's not going to be doing squats or whatever, yeah. Step two, something we hadn't seen in a while is Sean, does his usual awesome flipping and flopping, but he looked particularly vicious in this match. And for Sean, that's a lot because he tries not to wrestle like that anymore. He doesn't try to wrestle, the heel 97 way or whatever, even 93, 94. But, he pummeled Shane's face and ripping it against the side of the cage and, Sean was particularly vicious in this match, and we hadn't seen him like that in a long time. Winning matches is one thing, but he hasn't given the vicious look in a while. We saw a little bit of it when he fought Vince at 22, but we really see it now. Step three, I like the match. I don't think it had to be 25 minutes, though. Seemed to be some dead space in the first, 15 minutes. Probably could have shrunk this down to, maybe 16 minutes or 17 minutes. I think we'd have been fine. I don't think we needed 25 minutes. I thought there were some dead spots early on. There were some great spots, vicious spots, blood, and but there were some, lying around that probably could have been tightened. So I don't know if this match needed to be 25 minutes. It could have been, 17. And you know me, I don't say that a lot about DX or even Triple H matches, but this match probably could have been tightened up a little bit. And I have a fourth step. I think it's funny that we can suspend disbelief watching wrestling that 9 months earlier, Triple H and and Big Sho were in a feud, but they were on opposite sides.
Right.
Triple H was the heel and Big Sho was the sympathetic face with the big fucking thing on his hand. And now 9 months later, Big Show's the fucking heel badass, and Triple H is the happy-go-lucky DX guy. And another point, actually, at five steps, fifth step for this match.
Jeez, what a shock!
I know it was the first time you've complained a lot, and I guess I have too, that they've acted like childish idiots through most of this feud. Like they're not acting their age; they're acting like old school or whatever. But this amped up portion of the feud, the epilogue, we saw Triple H as Triple H again, the King of Kings, the bad, and Sean kind of with that 97 look, and particularly vicious, which was needed for this this match.
Yes.
So they definitely grew up and acted like a grown-ups instead of,
TV. And again, my issue with their run in this feud has really been the week-to-week TV. Like, watching it back on pay-per-view hasn't been awful. It was the slog of Raws every week doing the bullshit and the cocks and the paint and the not, that's penis the shit. That's the shit that really hurt this comeback run. Like, it was just, that's why I think as we're seeing this year unfold, 2006, I think it's negative memory and opinion, and we'll flesh this out as we finish the year. stems more from the TV and the general booking versus the pay-per-views. Like, to me, the pay-per-views haven't been terrible. They haven't been, you know, it's not the best pay-per-view year, but they haven't been terrible. To me, it was the getting through the weeks of TV and all the injuries and all the, you know, suspensions and everything else. And, you know, this stuff week to week, to me, that's what really, like, drives the memory down for this year.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what it seems like. I mean, yeah. We'll see how the rest of the year plays out. But so far, the pay-per-views haven't been abysmal.
No.
I think it's the TV that was a big part of it.
But I particularly think that they kind of amped up and acted more like veteran badasses just to put these guys away than all parlor tricks and dopey jokes.
No, definitely.
Which we saw a little bit of in the
match.
But
my point is they were doing that too. Like even at SummerSlam, I felt like they were.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even SummerSlam, you saw some of the dopey jokes. Yeah. Here, no. Here, they amped it up and went back to being like when they're singles guys. And I think it made the match particularly much better. I just didn't think it needed to be this long. I think you could have axed like 7 or 8 minutes off this. I don't know where you could have put it, but I mean, a lot of the other matches were already long. So DX, once again, they are now, what, 3-0 on pay-per-view since reuniting? And have put away the McMahon. So the question now is, what do they do now? that's a curious thing to look forward to.
I
thought this whole feud was to battle Vince, and now that you've vanquished Vince, what do you do? Do you go back to being singles?
This is what they do. You tearing off your shirt as he comes in the door.
Tear off his shirt.
Anyway, no, you're right. Where do they go from here? Do they stay as a team? Do they split back up? Do they mix it up a little bit? You know what? Where do they head from here?
Exactly. So we'll see as we go forward. All right. Next up, our third title match of the evening, and
want to take a little break. Let's take a little break.
Want to break now? Well, we'll break now. That's right. We are going to break now. Why don't we break now?
You need a little blow after that match. Take a breather.
So what do you think so far? I think it's been a great show.
It has, right? I mean, I wouldn't say great. 2 for 4. But the two bigger matches have delivered.
Okay. When we return, 3 matches left, 2 title matches, including the big one in the main event for the WWE Championship. First, it was in the challenger's backyard. Now, it is in the champion's backyard. More Unforgiven after this. But first, words in Canadian. Ayo, cuz.
Consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, it be that way sometimes.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look-see at Unforgiven 2006 as we continue to roll through that year in the world of WWE. Also, in the world of PTBN, plenty of stuff going on for you. A bunch of new podcasts have rolled out, including a new This Week in Wrestling and as well as a new Between the Sheets. It is bringing the end of the first year of that show. They've got, every week for the past year, they've delivered, so that's episode 52. So next week starts year number two of Between the Sheets. They went to 02. And it's pretty cool timing because that was the...
First draft.
No, not the first draft, but it was the announcement of the new GMs, Eric Bischoff and Stephanie McMahon.
That's right. The draft was earlier. That's right.
So pretty much almost a year to the day this week, they had that as well. So a new Criss Cross as well. Aaron George is back with Ben Morse, Jordan Duncan, and Jason Greenhouse stepping into the arena to argue and battle. And rumors bounding around, Scott, that your boy may be... entering the arena in August, so we'll see.
Ah, excellent, excellent.
New Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast as well, plus all of our usual written pieces, our Vintage Vault Refresh series, which, by the way, are available as free ebooks. If you click the right-hand banner, you can go ahead and order those for yourselves and read them for free. And we have a few up there now, and of course, we continue our trek through the Raws. We're through April of 93. Also, our Seinfeld Rewatch series continue. And Scott, it was a very famous episode last week we aired, of course, was the iconic Doll, the Doll episode, which includes Frank Costanza's Place to Be. So,
yes.
So it started the message board back in 07, eventually became the podcast, and the Empire.
And here we are now. Correct.
So be sure to read that and everything else, PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. Follow us everywhere. Send us an email if you have any questions. Our emails are all available on the website. Subscribe on iTunes and leave us reviews. Give us star ratings. That helps us out, helps get us noticed, and gets us into more homes. So
yes.
Do that. And then also, Amazon. Click the right-hand banner on the right-hand side, the banner on the right-hand side if you're going to do any shopping on Amazon. That takes you right there. You don't have to do anything else. You just click that banner. Do all your shopping. Helps us out a little bit. So, PlaceToBeNation.com. Do it once. Do it often. Do it many, many times.
Back to Toronto. And speaking of Toronto, we have our third title match of the evening. The Women's Championship on the line. And a day that my PIC does not want to live. A rough year for you, huh? Your boy left.
It was a lot of hits, right? One after the other. I was like, oh, yeah. Hurt. No. And then what? Hey. No.
Your boy left, and now your girl's gone. Give us the backstory here.
Well, on 9-4, Trish Stratus challenged Lita to a pay-per-view title match, adding in it that it would be one final match between the two enemies. Lita accepted, and the two brawled. Later that night, Trish teamed with Edge and Randy Orton to defeat Trish, John Cena, and Carlito. When Lita pinned Trish On 9/11, Trish wrestled what would be her final Monday Night Raw match, defeating Mickie James. And as 2006 progressed, rumor began circulating that Trish Stratus was looking to call it a career and retire from the ring. The news was actually broken by Lita during a segment on Raw in August, confirmed by Trish later on that she would indeed be quitting wrestling and her final match would be for the title in her hometown on pay-per-view. After the show, Trish would leave, spent the future bouncing around as a TV host, as a yoga instructor, and doing many other, you know, one-off things here and there, would eventually return sporadically over the years, various roles, even stepping in the ring. So we don't say our final goodbye yet, but we will wrap up our pay-per-view record, which is 19-15-1. Mm-hmm. 1-0 at the Rumble, 2-2 at Mania, 0-1 at King of the Ring, 0-1 at SummerSlam, 3-2 at Survivor Series, 13-9-1 at other events. And let's see here. 509 matches for her. TV, 121-92-10.
That's good.
Trish called her retirement, eventual retirement match, would be one of the top two moments of her life, she said in a recent interview. So, yeah, I was definitely surprised, Scott, because she was having, I mean, I don't say like a renaissance, because she's been pretty good, but this, mm-hmm. you know, refresh face run with Mickey and everything else, and she seemed to really be at her peak, and this one really caught me off guard. I kind of dismissed the rumors when they first started leaking out, and I was really, really surprised. I did not expect at all for her to be wrapping up. It just didn't seem like she was around that long. I mean, yes, she'd been around in the company like 6.5 years, but in ring, she didn't really start wrestling until late 01. I mean, she was doing matches here and there. So a 5-year active career, missed about a year for injury. So I just think, you know, looking back, it kind of makes sense. But at the time, it really, really surprised me.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that your two favorites almost had identical timelines in WWE, right? Kurt started on TV in, what, November 99, and Trish started, what, February 2000, I guess?
On TV, yes.
Yeah, so roughly the same time. I don't know if she had anything left to prove. Maybe she was like, all right, this was a fun run. I had a good career. You know, time to walk away. And, you know, while I'm still have my face and, you know, I'm still relatively healthy and, you know, and she wants to, you know, branch out to other stuff. So was she at the time the best worker on the roster in terms of the women? Yeah. I mean, Mickey's been great. You can never count out Victoria to give you a great match. But other than that, pickings were a little slim. I mean, we'll talk about Lita. But, you know, the Lita of 06 is not the Lita of 01, you know. Her injuries, I think, derailed her from being truly one of the greatest. But it was kind of sad. It was sad. What I can't believe, when you broke down the record, I can understand only one match at the Rumble because, you know, they didn't have a lot of women's matches. You know, they didn't have a lot of room for only one SummerSlam match? Isn't that weird? All those years, you know, starting with, you know, SummerSlam 2000 would be the first year she was, you know,
well, if you look
a
at
regular.
The women's title, I mean, she didn't really get active until the end of 01. And then 02 was such a tight card. The women's title wasn't prominent until Victoria came in at the end of 02. And then it was kind of a Raw exclusive thing. Yeah, I don't know. Just, and then she was hurt.
But not even, it didn't necessarily have to be with the belt either. It just could have been, I mean, she had great feuds without it.
No, I know.
It just seems weird. Just one SummerSlam match. Really weird.
Yeah.
But I remember being flabbergasted at her leaving. Kind of came out of nowhere. There wasn't injuries. It wasn't like a Daniel Bryan thing or anything like that where, you know, she had a major injury that if she wrestled again, she'd be paralyzed or anything like that. So it was stunning to the roster because she was a rock through the Ruthless Aggression era, you know, 02 to 05. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was a rock in the division and on the shows and on TV. So it was stunning when the news was official that she was leaving. Big deal. A little bummer.
Yeah, definitely. I was. And I mean, yeah, I guess if there's ever a time she's kind of leaving the division in good hands. It's probably like the most stacked it's been since her ascent when, you know, Ivory and all those, you know, women were out there.
Ivory.
Kind of hit the, you know, hit a lower point a couple years before this, but now we're kind of back with Mickey and you know, just kind of refresh the division. General lead is still there. So, you know, it kind of feels like, all right, she's leaving it at least in decent shape now.
Right.
It's kind of time to go, and it's in good hands. So, and of course, we should mention Lita won that title from Mickie James on the 8/14 Raw. And I think they pretty much did it to set this up once they knew Trish was leaving. They wanted
her rival to have the belt.
Yeah, they wanted them to go. Yeah, her rival to have the belt for her final match. So I think that's pretty much why they did that.
Mm.
So here we go. Lita, good matchup to close things out, given the history, like we said. I mean, they've pretty much been feuding on and off since like the summer of 2000 when you look at it. I mean, when they did the Hardys versus the TNA stuff. So Lita, champ now, still being a piece of shit bitch. Huge pop for Trish's entrance, already emotional as she comes out. Very hot start, hammering Lita, sending her to the floor, following with a fast press off the apron. Lita chokes away and keeps on the pressure, grabbing a chin lock. Trish kicks and chops her way back in. Trish and Lita end up on the top, slug away, and take a nasty bump to the floor. Back inside, Lita slams Trish off the top for a hard bump, but Lita whiffs on a moonsault. Lita blocks a Stratisfaction and throws Trish over the top. Lita works the lower back with a focused attack, but Trish catches up to her with a head scissors takedown and then a chick kick. Trish blocks a Twist of Fate and then rolls through a sunset flip into a sharpshooter for a massive pop. Lita tries to the ropes, but Trish drags her back to the middle of the ring for the win and another big pop. This is a really big show of respect for her to win the title in her last match. Like, they don't give that to many people, and I know it's the women's division, so they don't really care, but still, to give her that win, and, you know, they could have just done Trish Lita for not without the title involved and just had to be her final match. So for that to be, to show the amount of respect they had for her and what she did is kind of helping rebuild this division, to let her go out as champion and then have to immediately vacate the belt. I thought it said a lot. You know, it wouldn't have shocked me if she lost here just because of how they do things. But they clearly thought very highly of Trish. And big points to her, too, because she could have went out with kind of a safe match, you know, just kind of, you know, hit her a few spots and went out. I mean, she went out here and worked. Like, they took a couple nasty bumps and everything. Like, she really was going all out for her last match. She could have just played it safe. So good for her there, too. You know, sad end of the road, like we said, one of the company's biggest and most unlikely female stars. Like, I don't think anyone, you know, expected her to ever get this good and be this big of a part of the company when she first got started. So, you know, big credit to all the work she put in. It was a really good match. It got a lot of time. They let Trish be showcased one last time. Lots of emotion in the crowd. Crowd fed right in. And, you know, the more we look at it, Scott, it feels like this fall of 06 is really a turning point for the company as far as, like, a talent refresh goes. We're seeing more filtering out of some of those, you know, early 2000 stars.
Right. Yeah, I mean, well, step one, a tough year for you, as I mentioned earlier. Your boy left, and now your girl left in the span of, 7 weeks? So, very distraught you. No magic carpet rides for you anymore. So you find somebody new. Step two, perfect opponent for Trish's finale, as we mentioned, her biggest rival in the women's faces of this generation. You know, we've had some good girl, you know, some good women with the Diva Search and everything, but when it comes to brass tacks, you see that they've almost pretty much phased China out at this point. And, like, you almost forgot about her. Then again, until the end of her tenure, she pretty much only wrestled guys anyway. So, Trish and Lita were pretty much the face of the division from 01 to now. And they kind of both had extensive stretches injured as well. Step three, like you said, they could have just kind of walked through the motions and had a ho-hum match, but they went all out for 11 and a half minutes.
Yes.
And they didn't go through the motions and have a paint-by-number stinker. But I don't think Lita's looked that good in a long time. and Trish is Trish. She's not going to go out. She prided herself because everyone knew. I think in the back of her mind through her whole career, everyone remembers the 2000 stretch when everyone thought she was, you know, an untalented hack. And, you know, she had those few six-mans with TNA and looked atrocious. And I think she's always kept that in the back of her mind throughout her whole career. And now she's like, I'm not dogging this game, this match because it's my last. And that's why I think she did that. So, and, I mean, you could argue it's probably the best women's match in a long time. And obviously the two she had with Mickey were, you know, the two big ones, New Year's Revolution and 22 were both excellent. This one comes pretty close. To be in, you know, best women's match of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. You know? They definitely worked hard, and Yeah, I mean, she did more than a spots, like we said. And I like to finish, too, with the sharpshooter. Nice, you know, tip of the hat to Canada.
Yep.
That was a nice touch. And she did okay with it.
Yep. And an extra step, step four, a little hachi-machi for that outfit.
Yeah,
she saved, saved one of her best outfits for last, huh?
Right. We will miss her outfits, her hachi-machi outfits.
Oh, the outfits she's, as JR, as King would say, the outfit she's almost not wearing.
Right. Yeah, we'll definitely. So,
yeah. Nah. Farewell, Trish. Great run, great pay-per-view record, great TV record if Sutton has his numbers right. It was a great 190, what is it, 121.92 or whatever. It's actually pretty good for
definitely.
TV matches. So she's going to be missed, and I think there is a void. Even though, like you said, I think she did leave the division in good hands. You got Mickey, you've got Victoria, you've got Lita, and you know a few others. But there's a void, and they're going to have to find a way to close that void. So we'll see how they work it out. Trish Stratus, for the final time, what is it, seventh? Right? Sixth or seventh? I think it was seventh.
Yeah, that sounds about
and
right.
And final, WWE Women's Championship. Farewell, Trish.
Do you think they were going to retire the belt with her? I mean, that's what happened last
time. You know, it's funny you say that, because as I'm talking about the roster, as we're talking about the good workers, on the other side, you've got like the fucking Ashleys and the Christy Hemmies and the Candices, and you're like, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was. There was probably a little ambiguity on the future of what they were going to do. Maybe a little. I didn't think they were going to retire. I thought that Trish was going to come out, say thank you, and then they'd have one of our favorite things, title tournaments. So I thought they would keep the belt. But it wouldn't have surprised me if they decided, all right,
no,
well,
they
Trish.
They definitely were, with all the women they had on the roster. I mean,
yeah.
So yeah, she was seven-time champion.
Yeah, seven times. Farewell, Trish. And she had some good workers in her career. She fought Jazz, who was always good. She fought
Jazz, Ivory, Victoria, Gail
Ivory,
Kim.
Victoria, Gail Kim, China. Did she ever fight China? No, I don't think she ever fought. No, she might have fought him in like mixed tags.
Yeah, maybe.
Shooting with Eddie or whatever. Yeah.
Lita.
Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, can't argue with any of her
Molly.
Molly, yeah. Bull Naka Naka No. She would have been great. I think that would have been a great feud, actually.
Bull and Dump.
Bull and Dump. I thought Bull and Dump wasn't coming to your party.
Mm.
Son of a bitch. All right, so there you go. Trish Stratus is your new, of course, we know that it won't last, WWE Women's Champion. We go backstage with Mr. Grisham. Correct, JR?
Yeah. I don't have it, so sure.
Yeah, he is. He's backstage with Randy Orton, who pretty much blew off Trish's win. Nobody gives a crap. He goes, nobody cares, you stupid bitch. Such a fucking asshole.
Definitely reaffirming his heel status.
Yes. No one cares, you stupid bitch, except in Canada. It's not a very Renzi-ish. So he, you know, puts over, obviously, his opponent. Because he was close with Trish. Because we were wondering where Randy Orton was going to be on this card. Who's he facing, JR, and how do we get here?
He's facing Carlito. Because on 8/21, Randy Orton took on and defeated Ric Flair. After the bell, Orton continued to beat on Flair until Carlito came out for the save. The next week, Carlito cost Orton a match against Jeff Hardy, costing him an IC title match in the process. Over the next 2 weeks, the two men found themselves on opposite sides of six-man tags, with each man's team winning one. So, good rehab feud for Orton. Kind of needs it after the Hogan stuff. And a good chance for Carlito to elevate. His stock has never been higher. He's had a really good year in 06. Kind of a forgotten year for him. Started hot in the Elimination Chamber with all the tag stuff with Masters. Turned face. Had the big IC title match at Vengeance. The stuff with Trish. So, he's really kind of working his way up the card here. Goes right at Orton, who taunts him for a bit while locking up. Carlito spits at Orton and then hammers away. A lot of anger from both men early. You can kind of feel the stiff hatred in every shot they give. The crowd is really into Carlito here as he slams Orton in his nice springboard senton and springboard moonsault for two. Orton's mouth gets busted open hard way as Carlito keeps pouring on the strikes. Carlito gets backdropped into the edge of the apron, and Orton dropkicks him into the barricade. Orton takes over and grinds a chinlock, breaking it to hit a nice power slam and going right back to it. Carlito elbows his way out, and it's a springboard back elbow, a knee lift, and a clothesline during a hard-hitting comeback. The crowd starts to taper off a bit as Orton hits an inverted backbreaker to cut off the comeback. Carlito reverses an RKO into a backcracker and then fends off Orton, leaps off the second rope, but Orton catches him with an RKO for the win. I like the trade-off of finishers. That was a nice touch because both have moves that can come in a blink, and they exhibited that. I thought it was a really good match. Both guys looked good. It was hard-hitting. It didn't linger. Both guys brought the energy. Carlito, like we said, having a great year, unloaded all of his offense here. Orton needed a win like this, and it doesn't hurt Carlito because just having him in this situation is a big boon for him. So I liked this match a lot. Another strong match on the card. Another strong showing from Carlito. I mean, if you watch these handful of matches for him, you would think, wow, this guy's primed for like a major run. I mean, he's having tremendous matches left and right. Big time matches. And this is a big spot for him. And to me, this is another gatekeeper match. Like, you didn't need to give Carlito this win. Him falling to Randy Orton with a hard-fought, stiff match where he hangs with him the whole way and just gets caught with the flash RKO. Like, that's good. That's fine for what Carlito needed. He didn't need the win here. So I like the way the match was structured. It was hard-hitting. You could feel the anger. And I like the outcome because Orton really needed the win.
Yeah, the steps are quick. Step one, just a good, solid mid-card match. Didn't need to be – maybe if you wanted to – if I was talking earlier – if you want to hack a few minutes off of the DX match and throw it on here, could have given him a couple more minutes. But
yeah, see, I don't think he should have because they kept such a good pace, even with the chin lock, that it never slowed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If they wanted to. If they wanted to cut back on that other match. But that's fine. Step two, Orton attempts to shake. He's trying to shake off the loss to Hogan, which was not embarrassing, but was, kind of bullshit. And we went over that whole thing at the last vault. And step three, like you said, Carlito had to be the sacrificial lamb, but that's no problem. No problem at all. There's really not much more to say. Pretty straightforward mid-card match. Good win for Orton, but Carlito doesn't look bad. And they really have tried hard, JR, to make Carlito look strong. And we talked about earlier in the show about Jeff Hardy and his return. And you're getting a good little group build here. I mean, if they ever want to turn Carlito heel, it's a good feud for him to have with Jeff. So. Or he could have him tag, and that'd be kind of an interesting byplay of promos and skits with those two. So they've definitely tried to make an effort to put Carlito over as legit.
He's done his part. I mean, for a guy that had a rep as being lazy, like, I mean, he really worked his ass off during this run. He, he's expanded his moveset, and we talked about it. Maybe we were wrong. I don't know. We talked about it back at Backlash when we said Carlito should be the heel. That he was better suited as a heel, and Masters should have went face. And I mean, Masters has pretty much vanished from the face of the earth. But Carlito,
weird, right?
A guy I thought was better suited as a heel is kind of proven us wrong a bit because his face moveset has been really good. He's been good at selling his, he's busted out some really big moves during his comebacks, the moonsaults and the dives and everything else. The backcracker is a good face finisher because it comes out of nowhere, very much like the stunner.
Right.
So it's, it's a good, it's been a good mix-up for Carlito, so much better than we thought maybe back in April.
Right. So there you go. Randy Orton wins. A good, solid mid-card match. Carlito does not look bad, and it's a good it's weird. It's not a energy spell between the Trish and emotions and our main event, but at the same time, it was a good spot for it. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's not like a... It's a good match. Crowd was hot at times. They did taper off a little at the end, but it was a good match for them. And at the same time, it was a good spell between the emotions of Trish and then our final match. So good spot for it on the show. And speaking of, it is time now for our main event. The WWE Championship and the rematch. It was a road game for the champion in August, and now a road game for the challenger, JR.
It was. Coming off his unlikely defense at SummerSlam, Edge decided to make a splash, literally, on the 8/21 Raw. As he was gloating in the ring, we saw footage of Lita dumping John Cena's spinner belt into the harbor. Edge then revealed his new spinner belt that featured his rated R logo instead. Later in the night, Cena attacked Edge during his match with Jeff Hardy. They brawled into the back and outside where Cena was able to throw Edge into the harbor in a very cool spot. And the next week, Cena requested another title match, telling Edge he would leave Raw for SmackDown if he lost. Edge agreed, but said he got to choose when and where the match would occur. Later in the show, Cena was fighting Chris Masters. There you go. Speaking of. When Edge came down and assaulted Cena with a chair, he then used a ladder and table in his beatdown as well. Edge grabbed a mic and announced that their match would be in his hometown at Unforgiven in a TLC bout. On 9-4, Edge cut a promo while sitting on a ladder, but Cena came out, grabbed him, and dropped him with an FU through a table. And just like in the previous match, these two would be on opposite sides of two straight six-man tags over the following weeks, with each man's side picking up a win. So, Scott, this was actually our sixth TLC match, second one to have the WWE title on the line, and the second one in 2006. Do you think six feels a little bit light, considering it's been since 2000?
Well, considering that I think at first the gimmick was a tag-related gimmick, no, I think it's a fine number of matches. Because TLC, you know, Edge being in almost all of them makes sense. But the fact that there's been so few is because usually it was relegated to the tags, and you didn't really, only in this last year or so have we seen it be used more for singles purposes. But it's getting up there with Hell in a Cell as like the most popular gimmick, with fans. I know a lot of people like Hell in a Cell, I like Hell in a Cell the best, but I know a lot of people like TLC as their favorite gimmick. So, and it fit here.
So here we go. Yep. Feud continues with a very heavy stipulation as well, because John Cena must win, or else his Raw contract is voided, and that's why Teddy Long's there. And they said Teddy's already basically signed him to a 3-year deal to SmackDown, contingent on him losing here. So I kind of like that. I mean, you don't think he's going to go to SmackDown, but like Steven mentioned in the notes, there's a chance because he was filming the Marine and everything else. So maybe they'd shift him over there and you kind of separate Edge from him and let him run. So, I mean, there's a definite possibility it could happen. I thought that didn't, you know, on paper, you may think it telegraphed a Cena win, but I think it added a little bit more mystery than you may think. So good step here as Edge's wheelhouse is TLC. A lot more pressure on Cena again. Fun story build that firmly cemented Edge as a top heel. The crowd is pro-Edge to start. Cena controls early with power offense and responding to a slap with a ground and pound. Edge hits a neck breaker and goes for the chair, but whiffs. Back inside, Cena busts out a fisherman buster, and then Edge battles back and grabs two chairs and sets them open. After both teasing holes, Edge snaps Cena through them with a reverse DDT. Edge tries to scale the ladder, but Cena tips it over. Edge cuts him down and then goes back to the weapons. Edge drapes Cena across the middle rope and lines a ladder against his head and the drop kicks it from the barricade, and that was a pretty cool spot. Back inside, Cena reverses a charge and hip tosses Edge into the ladder. Cena tries for an FU over the top, but Edge blocks and floats down and clobbers Cena with an elbow. Crowd is still hating on Cena as he catches Edge up top, but Edge blocks a superplex and botches a sunset flip powerbomb that whiffs on going through the table. They recover and Edge puts Cena through the table to a pop, and they thought they covered pretty well for for the Bosch there. Cena goes outside and Edge meets him by running up a ladder in the corner and diving onto him. Back inside, Edge bashes Cena with a chair to the back and tries the concerto, but Cena trips him up and blocks it to some booze. Cena hits a blockbuster on the chair and then sandwiches Edge inside a ladder. Edge recovers and destroys Cena with a disgusting chair shot to the head, just one of the grossest we've seen in a while. And there's been some gross ones here in 06, but this is a really nasty one, and Cena was completely out of it and not moving. Edge puts Cena on the table and goes up top, but Cena shoves him off and follows him out, and he just looks out on his feet completely here. He's moving slowly. He's a bit lost, and then he slowly climbs the ladder, but Edge meets him with a spear. Edge scales the ladder, but Cena picks him off it and powerbombs him through another ladder in an odd bump. Cena still looks wobbly and out of it. Cena slowly climbs up again and gets close, but Lita comes in and tips Cena off the ladder and through a table at ringside in an awesome spot. Edge starts to climb, but Cena crawls back again. Lita comes in again and smashes Cena with a chair, and Cena wobbles forward and hits the ladder, sending Edge flying through two tables at ringside. Cena hits Lita with the FU to a pop, and then both recover and climb the ladder until Cena hoists Edge on his shoulders, sends him through stacked tables with an FU, and then grabs the title and wins it back in a fantastic match, one of the best of the year easily. Both guys kill themselves with heavy blows and bumps. It was the perfect payoff to what's been a very hot feud. Each trade win in their hometowns. Best match of the series and a great close to what ended up being a hot show. That chair shot, Scott, I've never read anything besides that it was selling, but he looked legit like out on his feet after he got whacked with that chair.
Yep. Yeah, he cracked him. And then the chair shot that he gave Edge outside was not as good. So I don't know if he was still a little wonky, but
he looked out of it throughout that whole final segment. But it was no, I mean, it was a great match. I think we'll talk about it in a minute, but I think it's been the best match we've seen in the 06 year.
It was tremendous, top to bottom. Step one, crowning moment for Edge. You know, here's a guy who we've talked about since 1999, wanting to get to this moment, standing at the top of the ramp in his hometown as WWE champion. That's mm-hmm. all the guy ever wanted. And he got his moment. And he looked so proud. It was a different, like, he didn't do the snarky asshole entrance with the
right.
with the coat and everything and lead it. Like, he came out alone and he had the belt around his waist and he just looked so happy. So proud.
And this run is made up for the whole mess earlier in the year.
Right.
Like, they've done a really good job of re-solidifying him as a main eventer.
Yep. Absolutely. And he just looked so proud at the top of that ramp. To be in front of his Canadian posse. So, step two, the crowd, definitely much better than the fucking half-baked, drunken weirdos we had 2 years earlier at SummerSlam. The crowd was fired up the whole show. Mm-hmm. Very few times they were quiet. And this match, they were all over the place. It was crazy. Step three, we've talked a lot about Cena in different circumstances in terms of ambiance and venue and crowd energy and that kind of thing. He was great at Hammerstein back at One Night Stand because he acted even a little heelish. And here, after he grabbed the belt, he got off the ladder and had that look in his face like, I know y'all don't like it, but tough fucking shit. I think Cena really understood crowds better than people thought he did. And I'm sure it bugged him when he got booed, but I think at this point, 2005, I think, the end of 05, beginning of 06, like when the crowd just trashed him in Albany, I think he was a little frazzled. But as the years progressed, I think he's definitely grown up and has understood how to handle this different kind of energy. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he earned it.
You know?
I mean, he's been on a real hot streak. I mean, pretty much since Mania. I mean, he hasn't really, you know, his match with Mania was really good at Triple H, the three-way at Backlash, the Sabu stuff, the RVD, you know. I mean, he's been really good in the Edge match at SummerSlam. And him and Edge, this refresh feud has been awesome. I mean, the stuff mm-hmm. in January, yeah, you know, whatever. But since then has been really, really good. Now, I mean, he earned this one. This is a signature win for him to pick this up and kick off another reign with that win. And I'm glad they did it here, not at SummerSlam. They could have went, you know, they could have had Cena beat him twice. They could have won at SummerSlam and then beat him in a rematch here, but they didn't. They let Edge get the win. And then, you know, Cena gets revenge in a big boy match here at Unforgiven. So I liked that. I thought it was a nice, mix up.
Right. I agree. And it was, I mean, they hit the shit out of each other. But Cena did at one point look like he was on Baker Street.
Yeah, he definitely did.
He gave up the booze in the One Night Stand.
Yes, he was. He was definitely wobbling around. I mean, yeah. It was either really good selling. It reminded me a lot of Orton. Remember Triple H, that match at like Rumble 05 or whatever?
Oh, yeah, when he was like a... Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it reminded me of that.
So John Cena, now a three-time WWE champion in easily a match of the year, and to this point probably Cena's best match. Actually, both guys' best match. All right. Let's look at our report card so far, our scoreboard, if you will. Now, just to recap, we are not grading the calendar year 2006. We are grading the creative year mm-hmm. 2006. So we're not going from Royal Rumble to Armageddon. We're going from Backlash to WrestleMania 23.
Right.
Here was our best match list thus far. We had going in, we had 1, 2, 7 matches. Mm-hmm. From 7 to 1, we had London and Kendrick versus the Pitbulls from Great American Bash. At 6, Triple H versus Edge versus Cena from Backlash. Number 5, Edge versus Cena from SummerSlam. Number 4, Foley versus Flair from SummerSlam. Number 3, Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. Number 2, Edge Foley Lita versus Dreamer Funk Beulah from One Night Stand. And number 1 was Cena RVD from One Night Stand. I think no doubt this match is better than that one.
Yes. This is easily our new leader.
Yep.
Leader in the clubhouse or match of the year. So that's number one. Yep. I'm trying to think of anything else. Well, hang on.
Oh,
I'm trying to think of anything else on the show.
The Cell is good. I don't know if I'd put it with any of these, though.
I think I'd put it ahead of the London match.
Really? Okay.
I'd bump that to 8 and put the Cell 7.
Okay. So, DX. DX.
I'm trying to recall that three-way at Backlash. It was really good, but I don't know. I'd have to think it over again. This might the Cell may even pass that.
Big. Okay. McMahon's in Big Show.
Orton Carlito.
Forgiven.
I'm debating if Orton Carlito would sneak in behind that.
Really?
Well, no, at the bottom, behind the pit.
What about
Hardy Nitro?
What about Hardy Nitro?
Yeah. Let's leave them both off. I think they're about the same.
Okay. So we now have 9 matches on our best match list. We now have DX versus the McMahons and the Big Show in 7th. And now a new leader in the clubhouse, the main event, Edge versus John Cena, TLC, from Unforgiven. We have 3 worst matches right now. Kane Big Show from Backlash, Kane from Vengeance, and the Braun Panties from Great American Bash. Nothing on this show was nearly as bad as any of those, so we'll keep those the way they are. Okay. And now the grade. We've had 6 pay-per-views so far. In 6th place, Vengeance, 5th, Backlash, 4th, Great American Bash, 3rd, SummerSlam, 2nd, Judgment Day, and 1st, One Night Stand. My opinion, I would easily put this number 2 after One Night Stand.
Yes.
It's definitely better than Judgment Day.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's better than Mania, too.
Okay, so
Mania's not part of this anyway.
And Mania's not part of this one, yeah. But I thought it was better than Mania anyway.
For calendar year, it's up there with One Night Stand and Mania as the top 3. Mm.
So right now, One Night Stand, still the number 1 pay-per-view of the creative year, but Unforgiven now slides into 2nd place. So we have a new best match leader and a new pay-per-view leader in our Vintage Vault scoreboard for 2006. So they have Unforgiven.
Yeah, really good show. Definitely worth checking out. And again, the pay-per-views continue to be pretty good. It's the TV, I think, that was the slog. So we'll see, though, because we're kind of hitting the usual swoon. Now, they withstood it in September.
Mm-hmm.
But like we said as well, 06, 05, 06 is really the beginning of the show after the Big Show becomes a heavy focus because they continue the feuds versus blowing them off. So we've seen a lot. Feud's not ending at Mania, Backlash becomes a big show.
Mm-hmm.
Feud's not ending necessarily SummerSlam, Unforgiven, bookending that show. So now we'll really hit the doldrum time, and we'll see as we reach the fall, the normally down time in October, November, December, how those shows hold up.
And we're also going to get a crush here because we're going to have, 5 shows in 11 weeks or some crazy thing?
Yeah, we got Mercy, Cyber Sunday.
Cyber Sunday, Survivor Series. Some special ECW show and Armageddon. So literally we have 5 pay-per-views.
We're getting tired of 2006, but we'll fight through it and we'll see where we head. So, okay, like we mentioned, nothing new next week from us taking the week off for St. Mary's. We'll be back hopefully in a couple weeks with No Mercy. Is that what's
it? It is No Mercy, yes.
So back with No Mercy. We will have a new Clotheslines and Headlines this week.
Yes, you will.
Lineup. We have Mr. Brian Bayless who will be joining us to talk draft. Oh.
Yes, he was part of the main event. You'll have both guys be part of the main event scoreboard that we took this past week. We did our draft preview.
We'll recap that as part of it. We'll recap the draft itself. We'll preview Battleground as well. And then we're going to be talking, of course, TNA as always, with Mr. Aaron George, the Never Ending. And then Chad Campbell will return. We've got a lot of New Japan news to cover, so Chad will be in the house for that. And, of course, the Cowboy will be back as well because we're going to talk about Brock Lesnar's steroid suspension or steroid failing test that he failed. So,
what a mess. A
lot to cover Wednesday night. Clotheslines and Headlines. Stay tuned for that and all the other shows on the Place to Be podcast, PWO, PTBN, and PTBN Pop feeds on iTunes. So, for Scott, I'm Justin, we're out. Sir, I'll see you on Friday.
Yes.
I'll see a bunch of other you on Friday as well. and Saturday.
Wait, Saturday.
And until then, everyone, we'll talk in 2 weeks. Take care.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be chilly hot. Whack. It ain't going to be chilly whack, that's for sure. It's going to be sweat a whack. I need you to get up on the dance floor. Get that man what he's asking for. Because I feel like busting loose and I feel like touching you. And can't nobody stop the juice. So baby, tell me what's the use. I said, it's getting hot in here. So, hot. So take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot. I want to take my clothes off. Oh, it's getting hot in here. So, hot. So take off all your clothes. I am getting
with a winner, so baby, I can't lose. I got secrets, can't leave Cancun. So take it off like you're home alone. You know, dance in front of the mirror while you're on the